side. I'm from the people of the snow, boy. That mean I thrive in the winter time. Yeah, I'm what they call a savage kid. My family tree is bigger than the Old and New Testament. I put a fist up. That's where they call it Kaepernick. Somebody gotta stand for it.
Tell them who you want.
So beware, we black snake killers. Black fish, I've been a killer. We're the ones you can't get rid of. Sound familiar? Yeah, long hair, that Ric Flair. Nature boy from the village. G.E. for Billy Billy. You see, I don't rock and roll.
Rock and roll.
Nah, I stand and rock.
Stand and rock.
Yeah. I think there's something in the water. Here's some food for thought. Is it really a felony for wanting my water clean? Expect it's not to rage against the machine. Ain't moving like Rosa P. Nope. You know why? Cause this dream catcher ain't catching your pipe dream.
Word.
Look what happened to Flynn. No disrespect, but the same thing happens to village kids that see water from the tap and are dying to live from the cancer it gives. Where's the state of emergency for them?
I don't know.
Act like you know the story. Broken treaties, unholy matrimony. One nation, under the creator, homie. All my relations, many with Choney.
Warriors, come out and play. Officer.
The preceding program was produced at KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. More audio can be found online at kboo.fm.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Every single person since SB8 has been a law has needed to travel out of state. Every single person that's reached our line.
We've been clinging on to Roe versus Wade and the protection that it offered. And it feels as though that protection is being taken away from us. So it feels as though this is a moment of survival. And I think any moments of survival can be very scary.
What did abortion access look like in America when Roe was the law of the land? Tune into KBOO's Roe on the Rocks, a limited series podcast where I investigate this question as I take you through the months leading up to the U.S. Supreme Court decision that effectively overturned Roe. That's Roe on the Rocks, airing Thursdays at 9 a.m. You don't want to miss it.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Bag and Baggage Productions presents The Tempest, performing from Thursday, August 11th through Sunday, August 28th in Hillsboro. This bilingual adaptation of William Shakespeare's The Tempest will be performed throughout various parks in Hillsboro. The Tempest is a story of love, redemption, forgiveness, and the nature of storytelling. That's Bag and Baggage Production presents The Tempest, performing from Thursday, August 11th through Sunday, August 28th in Hillsboro. More information can be found at kb.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hello, this is Jennifer Davis Page, the host of Boom Goddess Radio, and I welcome all of my listeners to the show today. We are featuring a wonderful nonprofit clinic today called Clinica Amistad. They were the recipient of the Big Give, which is awarded by 100 Women Who Care in Tucson. 100 plus women who care in Tucson. Before we tell you the story of the clinic, I want to tell you a little bit about 100 Women Who Care. And then Patricia and Nicole will tell you how they got accepted into the Big Give Bowl, if you will. Every quarter, the members come together to make an impact within our community. They do this through the selection of a local charity by the members. Along with their donations, they also promote awareness for the charities. The Desha Byers Davis is the founder of the 100 Plus Women Who Care in Tucson and has done a remarkable job in leading the charge for all of these amazing charities here in town. And for more information, you can go to their website, 100 womenwhocaretucson.org. Congratulations, ladies. Congratulations for winning the big gear.
Thank you.
Pat and Nicole, thank you for joining Boob Goddess Radio today. Tell us about the services that you provide to our community. Just give the pitch, and I'd like to talk about the founder and how the two of you got involved.
Absolutely. Well, I can start. I'm Nicole. I'm the executive director at Clinica Amistad, and we were founded in 2003. We are a free healthcare clinic, and we service anyone who does not have insurance. And we kind of treat the entire patient. We offer services from everything from dermatology, which Pat will tell you about, but it's primary healthcare. We provide insulin, we provide labs, we provide mental health some. We do have counselors on staff as well. And then we have like diabetes programs, women's health initiatives, and we just kind of do the whole gamut of everything. But we started out serving about maybe 100 to 200 patients a year. And right now we are close to almost 2,000 patients a year. And that's just within the span since 2003.
Oh, that's amazing. How do the patients find out about you, and how are they selected?
Sure. Well, one of the things, and Pat can jump in this too, one of the things we have, we're a very interesting and very different model. We're almost 100% volunteer run. We have a very small but mighty staff, but our doctors and our helpers are all volunteers in the community. And so it is all word of mouth right now as far as how patients learn about us. And then we also do some recruiting of getting good doctors and good providers and nurses and EMTs to come in through the community and give up their services to this better, greater cause.
Yes, and if I can say that Clinica is like a miniature multi-specialty clinic. We have a variety of different healthcare providers that come in. We have MDs, PAs, NPs that come in, and they're from different specialties. I specialize in dermatology, so I provide all the dermatology services at this multi-specialty clinic. We have an endocrinologist, we have pulmonologist, we have cardiologist, we have an orthopedic physician that comes in, we have optometry, we have optometrists that come in and do eye exams. So the beautiful thing about the clinic is, if you were to imagine, you know, a for-profit multi-specialty clinic, that's what Clinica Amistad is. And it's just all in one place. And our patients find out about us mainly through word of mouth. We are located in a part of town that serves the underserved population. It's mostly the population, the working poor, those construction workers, landscapers, hotel workers, cooks, just people who do the general basic work in a community that unfortunately their jobs don't provide them with healthcare. It's very difficult because healthcare is so expensive. So we do primary care as well. That's our biggest group of providers that we have, is primary care. So we could see anything from diabetes, hypertension, sprained wrist, you know, back pain, stomach aches. We also have an incredible nurse practitioner who does the women's health. So she actually does a variety of things. We do some general pap smears, but she also takes care of the more complicated cases. Also, the wonderful thing about Clinica Amistad is that we have an outreach program with our community physicians. So if there are things that we cannot take care of medically at Clinica Amistad, we do have partnerships with community physicians. Like if someone needed a stress test or an echo, or even with lab work, we work closely with LabCorp. They've supported us for a very long time. We can send our patients to LabCorp to have their lab done. We work with Simon Med, Radiology Limited, if people need x-rays or ultrasounds or mammographies. So we've kind of cast a net within the medical community that is connected with Clinica Amistad, but we're basically a safety net for Tucson's low income uninsured.
This is an amazing
connect.
I don't have to check.
If I have 2 seconds to just, go ahead. I was just going to dovetail on what Pat said on that as well, is when we send them out to these other external consultations, Clinica still provides the payments for those. So they get all their services from us at no charge. So when they go for an x-ray, we cover that. When they go for lab work, we cover that. If they need insulin, we cover that until they can take care of it on their own. So we really do kind of do that whole encompassing of patient care. We don't just want to send them out and hope they come back with their labs or hope they come back with their x-rays. We really follow through with all of that and make sure that they are completely covered and they're not lost in that system.
Now, with the x-rays and the MRIs and all of that, why can't we, I'm asking a question, why can't we find someone to donate those services so that you don't have to send a check at the end of the month? I know you are, because I know you're brilliant, but I mean, are you looking for labs that will donate, and have you been successful at all, or is anybody on the hook for that, or what?
Well, when I joined Clinica Amistad 12 years ago, we did have a partnership with LabCorp, and LabCorp would only allow us to do so many labs, but they would allow it to do us for us to do it at a very reduced rate. Well, what we did, we were able to expand that panel. So we cannot, that's a good question. It would be nice if we could get them to donate all those services for us, but you know, they have costs to deal with as well. So what they've done is they have, that we have an arrangement with them in which the fees are reduced as far as they can be. And the same thing with the other imaging facilities. So where the need is for our clinic is, you know, thank goodness for organizations like 100 Plus Women, is those donations go to helping pay for those services. And actually, Clinica is very fortunate in which we have a lot of our donors are private individuals. So that is, they're our biggest support. And Nicole could tell you more about that as well.
Tell us a little bit about the founder. Tell us he decided in 2003 to start this. Tell our listeners what, aside from the need, what made him decide to design a program like this for the needy.
I think we have three that basically launched, but Dr. Kligman was our big founder. Mm-hmm. Along with Father Ricardo, and they really just found the need. We had enough people that were falling through the cracks, and they wanted to make a difference. When we very first started, we were operating out of a closet in somebody's practice, and at night we would roll the equipment out, and we would serve our patients. We'd roll the equipment back in, close the doors. Now we're very blessed to have, I think we have 9 exam rooms, and a counseling room in the old Pueblo Center. And, you know, the vision was to just continue to expand. So we want to continue to expand not only the healthcare, but the education process where it comes to diabetes. We're going to teach you how to take care of yourself with diabetes. You know, we're not just going to say, here's some insulin. We want to do classes, and we've launched a pre-diabetes program where we do classes and instruction on how to cook. And we were very fortunate to have a private donor fund that entire program. And then we also do things like, my mind just left.
It'll come back, go ahead.
Yeah, it'll come back eventually, maybe. But you know, we're very fortunate to have that, and we are talking about cooking demonstrations, on shopping demonstrations for people, again, still with this diabetes program, where it's very easy to say, go and eat a certain food. It's very hard when you're on your own shopping to say, what kind of food did I need? And it's very tempting to grab that, you know, fattier refried beans versus the black beans, or that extra tortilla from the street cart or something like that. So it's not just about that initial care. Again, it goes to the education, which was one of the goals, community outreach, and just really working again with our students too. We do basically workforce training. And I think we can kind of touch on that in a little bit about how we bring our volunteers into the fold and become one giant family here at Clinica.
What kind of, for certain volunteers that have a medical license, how do they, I mean, they can donate their services certainly, but what kind of licenses, what kind of people with licenses are you looking for currently?
We always need licensed practitioners. Rheumatology is a big one we're looking for right now. Pat can jump in anytime as well. But we just need as many practitioners that will give us space. We are to the brim with the patients we are serving. We are seeing at least 35 new patients a month. That's not appointments, that's new individuals that have never walked into the clinic before. And so we just need more providers, primary health care, emergency care, women's health. Pat, jump in with any name.
So we can use a variety of healthcare providers, but basically any MD, DO, PA, nurse practitioner. You do have to have an active Arizona license. Clinica Amistad does provide malpractice insurance for us. So basically, if you have an active healthcare license, you know, like I said, you could be a physician, a PA, a nurse practitioner. We're always looking for that. We're always looking for people who are also specialized in certain things that we don't have. Like she said, rheumatology. We can always use more ortho because we have, you know, a lot of our patients are laborers. And so they have back pain, knee pain, chronic use, joint issues. So, musculoskeletal providers. Also, we have a physical therapist. We have an acupuncturist. So as long as they're licensed in the state of Arizona, we do provide those integrative services. We're always looking for people to join us.
We only have 30 seconds left, and we'll certainly continue this on the other side. But can you do they come to their offices, or do they have to come if they have a practice? Do they come to the patient? Oh, look, I'm running out of time. I'll ask the question on the other side.
We'll move that on the next side.
I'm going to take a quick break. We'll come back with Patricia and Nicole in just a few minutes. Don't go away.
Let's go drifting through the trees. Let's go sailing on the sea. Let's go dancing on the juke joint floor. Leave our troubles all behind. Have fun so easily forgot all the most important things, like the melody.
Goddess Radio. This is Jennifer Davis Page, your host, and I'm here today with Patricia Farrar and Nicole Glassner. Nicole Glassner is the executive director of Clinica Amistad. Welcome back, ladies. My question before we went to break was, if you are a medical professional and you do want to donate your time and services, say a certain amount of hours a week to you, but they have their own medical offices, do you send your patients to them, or do they have to take time to come to your facility to give their time?
Most of our providers, they donate their time by coming in. So we're open on Wednesdays and Thursday nights, and then we're also open the first Saturday of every month, and I believe we're looking into open up another Saturday. But usually the providers come to us and they do their clinic session, and then they're done. Now, with our community physicians, physicians that we refer to, say, for example, someone needs a stress test. So that particular physician may not come to our clinic, but we have a relationship with them in which we can send the patient to them because they have all their equipment in which they could do the testing that needs to be done for the patient. But those, as Nicole had mentioned earlier, those community physicians, we do have to sometimes pay a consultation fee for that. And we work very closely with them, and we try to work things out as most cost effectively as possible.
If you're like a primary care provider and you want to come volunteer at the clinic, We are open around 5 o'clock in the evening. We stay until we see the patients, which is usually 9:30, maybe 10. And it's like Pat said, Wednesdays and Thursdays, the first Saturday of the month. We are opening on Tuesdays for our pre-diabetes program. We try to do it so that we can not only help the providers get there, so it's not conflicting with their real life jobs, but also that it helps our patients be able to come in where it's not interrupting their work time, because as we know, it's really hard to get off for those work schedules to make time for that.
That was my next question. So you have evening hours so that the volunteers that have full-time jobs from 8 to 5 or whatever can still go to work and still assist you in the evening.
Correct.
That's right.
The other folks that volunteer for us are mostly U of A and Pima Community College students. They are studying medical usually, and they come in and they help us with the vitals, and they help shadow the providers and help scribe for us. And they have classes during the day as well. So we really work. We know that our volunteers' time, their first job is their job. Mm-hmm. And is school, and then we will take anything else you're willing to give us. And then same with our patients. You know, again, it's really hard. You already have a job that doesn't give you insurance, so we also know that that's a very hard dynamic then to come and to take time off and get other places. And that's why we do try and offer as much in-house as we can, because again, you have to take time to go all these different places. You're either going to, it's just putting those extra barriers in front of our patients to not get the care they need.
If you're a patient and you have the need, how do you prove that me as a patient has the need and I'm not just somebody that is, well, I don't want to use the word scam, but I mean, because if you have insurance, do you take patients that might have limited insurance or just no insurance at all?
That's a great question. Oh my gosh, and that comes up quite a bit. So we have are you human and do you not have insurance? Those are the two criteria.
Okay.
So we take anybody without insurance. However, there are some patients that do have health insurance, or they have somewhere along the line gotten health insurance, but they like our clinic so much they don't want to go anywhere else. So sometimes that's a bit of a problem. Or we'll have patients that say are eligible for the affordable, to be totally subsidized by the Affordable Care Act, or they're eligible for access. So we do have a little bit of a screening process. If a patient shows up and say, for example, they're eligible for access, well, we're gonna go ahead and see them. We're gonna see them, we're gonna get their initial care going, but we're gonna tell them, or we're gonna let them know that they could go to El Rio, they could go to Marana Healthcare, they can talk with them, they could get on an access program, and therefore they have more resources. So what we try to do is we try to take care of truly the people that don't have the ability to get access, the ability to get on the Affordable Care Act. But we do have to screen sometimes. And sometimes patients will come and then we'll have health insurance. And then that'll be one of our questions when we see the patients, you know, is it possible you have health insurance? Are you eligible for access? And then if they let us know, well, yeah, I do have this health insurance, but I don't know how to use it. Then we're like, okay, let us give you some direction. Because some people just don't know. And you just got to educate them. You just got to spend a little time with them, educate them, and let them know what resources that they do have, whether it be, you know, eligibility for access, eligibility for the Affordable Care Act.
What about
we have a patient advocate that really does work well with them and say, okay, here's the next step. We just don't want to say, okay, you're eligible for access, see you, bye. We really walk them through the process and we get them connected to the right folks in town. And, you know, we do see other folks that if they do have insurance and it comes out that they do, we're not gonna not see them their first visit, but we're gonna encourage them next time. And if they go to pick up their prescription and insurance picks it up, that's kind of a flag for us that they have insurance.
Okay.
So the next time they come in, we're again gonna just encourage them to go the next place, but we will never refuse people for care. There are other places that can help them once they're insured.
Let's talk about seniors that might have Medicare, okay, but they don't have that supplemental insurance that you need, all right? So now, I've got to ask this question. Are you going to see them? I mean, they've got partial insurance, and I'm not quite sure you answered that question with the last question I asked, but will you see them if they have Medicare, but they don't have the supplemental, or not?
We will see them initially. We will see them initially, but we will try to direct them to get care where their Medicare services are covered. And usually the federally qualified healthcare centers like El Rio, like Marana, I'm not sure exactly what is in Phoenix, but there are federally qualified healthcare organizations that are specifically there and government supported for people in those situations.
Okay.
So, you know, and healthcare is very hard to navigate.
Yes, it is.
And we do have connections at each of those places that we can, again, guide them. It's not just we're going to say, okay, you're a, you know, we know you have Medicare, see you. We're going to make that phone call to Marana or to El Rio and say, we have a patient, we're going to send them your way. And we have a referral coordinator that takes care of that and just make sure that they are taken to that next step again, because we, our focus is really on the uninsured. And though a lot of those Medicare and Medicaids don't cover as much as we would like to see, you know, they cover more they cover more than what our patients are available for right now.
So. But your patient is the patient with absolutely no insurance at all.
Yes, and I do want to mention one thing. There is a minor little exception there. There's something called emergency access. And that's where people don't have health insurance, but if they're in an emergency situation, they will have coverage. Now, those patients we do see because so say if they have diabetes and their diabetes isn't controlled, and then they ended up with kidney failure, then they're going to end up in the ER. So we don't want that to happen. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I look at Clinica Amistades. We try to keep people out of the ER. We try to keep them out of health crisis situations. We try to keep them healthy and working in the community so they can raise their children and their children could be productive community citizens without having to take care of their parents because their parents let their diabetes get under control because they didn't have access to care. So we kind of look
really
at that.
Not having to make that choice between paying rent or paying for healthcare. You know, we're going to ease that decision for them and let them focus more on family and focus more on taking care of people while we've got your back for the health side of it. And Pat, I'm sorry, I kind of jumped in there. So
no, that's okay. But the other thing is that's so wonderful. There's so many wonderful things about Clinica is, you know, with our patients, we do provide the free healthcare services to them, the consultation services. We do ask them to pay for their medications if they can. And when we prescribe medications, we use programs like GoodRx, and also we use the $4 pharmacy list. So we do ask the patients to pay for their medications. We do want them to have an investment in their own health. So, you know, that is all, you know, taken into consideration when we see the patient. You know, when, you know, you need this prescription, it's going to be $30 a month for the next 2 months. Can you afford it? If they can't afford it, great. If they can't afford it, then we try to find a way in which we can get either the price reduced or sometimes Father Ricardo, who is the heart and soul of our clinic, sometimes he has a little kitty and he'll pull out a few bucks for the patients to help them. So, you know, we try to keep the patient completely engaged and invested in their own health, as well as, you know, we providing the services that they need to keep them healthy and keep them out of the ER and keep them working.
Are you the only clinic in town like this?
Yeah.
I'm not asking you to promote anybody else, but I'm just asking, are you a one of a kind right now?
Our model is one of a kind. It's volunteer run and it is free. We do not ask our patients for a dime for us. They do if they have $5 on, they can put it in the little patient donation bucket at the end. It's very rare that we have to have buy-in from our patients. So they know we're there for them. But we are very, very unique. I mean, there, as far as I'm aware, there is not another clinic in Southern Arizona that is completely volunteer run and serves the underserved and the uninsured.
We need
the same model we do.
We need to have hundreds of thousands of these clinics across America.
Well, one other thing I want to mention, Jennifer, that's also so unique about Clinica Amistad, and Nicole touched on it just a little bit, is our support staff. So we have about 35 or 40 healthcare providers that come in. We have, you know, so we licensed providers come in. Well, to support us, we have, you know, we have to have patients brought back. We have to have the patients have their vital signs. We have to have patients, you know, educated on certain things, you know, taking their medications or what have you. So our support staff are University of Arizona and Pima College students that are working their way into a medical profession. They're pre-med, pre-nursing, pre-PA. We have public health students that work with us. We have healthcare administrative students that work with us. The majority of our support staff is from the university. So not only are we providing these, you know, services to the patients in the community, but we're also a training ground for our future healthcare providers. So they get to see the whole social justice system. They get to see how difficult it is for patients to get healthcare and how difficult their lives could be. They get to see the real life experience of what it is like being in a healthcare clinic in a resource limited situation, which is very eye-opening to our population. I stay in contact with a lot of these volunteers that go on to become doctors, PAs, nurses, and they always seem to come back around and they're always so grateful. Wherever they land, they end up volunteering at a community clinic in their area because it's just something that kind of touched them and has stayed with them. So we spin off a few wonderful circles at Clínica Amistad. And to me, the whole crux of Clínica Amistad is just to take care of each other, take care of a community.
I have come to an end of the show, but I so, Pat and Nicole, I want to thank you both for introducing Clínica Amistad to our listeners. And I want to thank all of my listeners for tuning in and for their support. Please visit us at boomgoddessradio.com and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Boom Goddess Radio. And remember, love and kindness is never wasted. And we'll see you on the radio next week. This is Jennifer signing off. Thanks, ladies.
You know, on a really dark night, even in the North Carolina mountains, you might be able to pick up KBOO, community radio, coming to you from Portland, Oregon. This is SciCon coming to you from Charlotte, North Carolina, supporting community radio. Radio that works for all of us.
Hello and welcome to Boom Goddess Radio. I am Jennifer Davis Page, your host. Today we're going to talk about diabetes. Over 30 million people in the United States has diabetes, and our guest today is Lily Mees, the founder and CEO of Stepping Forward, which provides life-changing education to those caring or dealing with chronic disease. Their signature program is pre-diabetes and diabetes. Welcome, Lily, to Boom Goddess Radio.
Hello, thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
This is such an important question. I always like to tell our listeners before we get into the meat of the interview, I'd like you to introduce yourself. Tell our listeners about you and your background and why this was your choice in your career path.
Sure. So as she mentioned, my name is Lily Mees. I'm the author and founder of Stepping Forward, where we provide life-changing education on chronic diseases. And as she mentioned, our signature program is diabetes and pre-diabetes, to talk to people about it and hopefully help them to implement some changes in their lifestyle. My background includes a bachelor's in exercise science, and I also have a master's in social work. Recently, I was able to obtain my certification as a diabetic educator, which is a national certification, to be able to just incorporate all those that have diabetes and be knowledgeable and be an expert about it. So one thing, I also have type 1 diabetes. I was diagnosed later in my 30s, and I've had it for quite a while. And so that's why it's kind of a passion of mine, not just for type 1, but, you know, most people are primarily type 2s, and there's a lot of those that have pre-diabetes. So, you know, it's definitely helped me to be healthier. I think it's not about what's happening to you, it's what's happening for you. So I look at that as actually a blessing in disguise. It's helped me to really change my lifestyle for the better.
Tell us, what is diabetes? And can you tell us the difference between type 1 and type 2. You're type 1, I'm type 2. So tell us the difference between those two.
Yeah, so type 1 is about a 3-5% of the population, and it's an autoimmune disease, also known as, used to be known as juvenile diabetes, you know, with the kids. And it actually can happen later in life as an adult or anytime through you know, 0 through 100 years old. And it's an autoimmune disease. It's basically a virus comes in and it ruins the insulin that is produced out of the pancreas. So just like people have rheumatoid arthritis, they have other autoimmune diseases that ruin the good cells, this being insulin, and it doesn't allow it to do its job. And therefore, we have to use, as myself and 3-5% of the population, have to use insulin to be alive, to survive. So I thank God for insulin. People always think about insulin being something that's negative, but it you know, thank God that it was developed and that we can use it and people stay alive for many, many years. Now, type 2 is more of the 95% of people. It is more of obviously the population at large, and it is really more complex. So it is, you know, your body's producing some insulin through the pancreas, but you are insulin resistant. In other words, you're not being able to use the insulin that's needed. So you're also, your liver puts out a little bit of glucose throughout the day. So sometimes that is a challenge in itself. So it's a little bit, you know, it's a little bit more involved because it has a lot of different variables that people are navigating. So I think actually type 2 is a little bit more challenging to manage than type 1.
Can a person go from type 2 to type 1?
You know, that's a good question. Unless they develop the antibodies for type 1 later in life, that certainly could happen. But usually type 2, they're type 2 and they kind of stay type 2. It is a chronic disease, so they may need to be put on insulin if these other medications are not working. So there are type 2s that use insulin as well as oral medications, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. Mm-hmm. Signs. What are signs and symptoms? You know, tingling in the bottom of your feet. I mean, I've heard people talk, you know, I have friends that, you know, we share our stories, and tingling in the bottom of your feet. That's something. Tired. Yeah. Talk about some of the signs and symptoms of both.
So just using from myself as an example, even though I have type 1, it is... You're urinating a lot, you're tired, some people have dry skin, they have, you know, you mentioned the tingling in the feet, that's named neuropathy. It could be also tingling in the little fingers as well. You're thirsty because you're losing a lot of the glucose in your urine, and you lose weight actually because you're not getting the nutrition that you need. So if you think of diabetes as, you know, just to kind of backtrack a bit, the pancreas, when you eat something, right, carbohydrates, all carbohydrates turn into sugar. Mm-hmm. And sugar is used, glucose, same thing, is used to give us energy for whatever we're doing. And what insulin does is insulin is a key that allows, it opens the door to the cells that allows the glucose to go in there and give us the energy that we need. Now, when you're type 1, you're kind of insulin resistant and you're not being able to use, you know, you don't have enough insulin on board. And so therefore the glucose stays in your blood system. And where does it go? I tell people, well, some of it's stored in the liver, some of it's stored in the muscles, but a lot of it is we pee it out. So that's why you start peeing, and that's why you're thirsty, because you're losing all the good nutrition and you're losing weight.
Okay.
Which is not the ideal way. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, you know, everyone that I've talked to has walked the walk that you're just talking about, you know, right. And losing weight, but they're not dieting, and they're thirsty and urinating a lot. So yes, that makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah. Now, and being lethargic is because you have so much glucose in your blood, which is very viscous, like honey. Mm-hmm. And so that's why people feel tired, because that's what they have in their, you know, running throughout their blood.
All right, now we've all got our little device where we're pricking our finger and we're taking our blood sugar levels. How often, first of all, where should those numbers be? And how often should we test our blood sugar?
Mm-hmm. So that's good. And you know, we want to preface this that you got to run everything by your provider. So, you know, I'm saying a lot of stuff, but there's a lot of great questions, but we want to make sure that you are checking with your provider on everything that, you know, we're kind of mentioning, because we're not really here to give medical advice. We're here to give education.
Exactly.
And you really want to utilize your team who knows you best.
Right.
So I just wanted to put that out there.
Right.
So the targets that you should have for your blood sugars, for most people, when you wake up before you eat breakfast, it should be between 80 and 120. And that's what the blood sugar should, you know, should be the target range. After you eat, your blood sugars go up, because that's the normal process of what's happening in our body. 2 hours after you eat, you can check your blood sugar and it should be 180 or less. You should check your blood sugar anytime you don't feel good. So this is what I tell people: anytime you feel funny, anytime you have you just don't feel right, you should check your blood sugars, because you could be really high or you could be really low.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's really high? That would be probably 200 or more.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people are 300 and 400 and they don't even realize it.
Right.
And if you're low, that's usually below 70, and that can be very critical. Your brain is the primary source to utilize glucose. So guess what happens when your glucose goes down? Your brain function goes down.
Okay.
And your heart, you know, people, I always ask them, one of the first things I ask them is, are you having any low blood sugars?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because certain medications will do that. Also increase in physical activity. So their low blood sugars would be, yeah, I've been getting sugars like 50 and 60 and 70. And I'm like, do you know what to do? Because that could be critical. That could be life-threatening.
So if you're low like that, though, what do you do?
Okay, so there's a great rule of thumb, and it's from the standards of care, from the diabetes standards of care, is there's a 15-15 rule. And what does that mean? It's 15 grams of a simple sugar. That could be 4 ounces of juice. That could be 6 to 8 lifesavers. That can be one of those little pouches of applesauce that has 17 grams of simple sugar. So it could be honey, it could be milk. So anything that is a 15 grams of simple sugar, you wanna have that right away. And then the other 15 part is you wanna check your blood sugars in 15 minutes.
Okay.
And what should be happening? The blood sugar should increase.
Okay.
And if it's still low, you repeat the process.
All right.
And if it's still low, then you need to call 911. So it's serious. And then I always tell people afterwards, you know, if it's starting to go up, the numbers are starting to go up, just have a snack or your next meal, protein and carbohydrates, to help stabilize that blood sugar.
Oh, this is so much good information. Can you get rid of type 2 diabetes? I mean, once you have it, and you become intelligent about what you're going to eat, and can you get rid of it, or is it something that you might get your A1C down to 6 or 7,
mm-hmm.
hopefully 5, but 6 or 7, and then, but, well, the question is, are you always threatened that the A1C may soar, of course, depending on,
yeah.
on your lifestyle, right?
Yeah. So diabetes is a chronic disease. It doesn't go away, but you can manage it and you can maintain it. And I always tell people, my patients, members, I say, who's driving the bus?
Mm-hmm.
You have to decide who's driving the bus.
Mm-hmm.
So you can drive the bus. It's called diabetes self-management for a reason, because really you're in the driver's seat,
mm-hmm.
and you have your team, you know, as people to help you along the way. So you can maintain it. It doesn't have to rule your life. And I think if you have the right support, if you have the education, and we're not looking for perfection. You're not looking to just, you know, I want to be at this perfect number. It's not about that. It's about making progress. And it's really about a lifestyle that's healthier for you as an individual. And studies show that complications of diabetes are lessened when you are more aggressive about getting that A1C 7% or less within range. And for those that don't know what A1C means, A1C is really an average of what your blood sugars are within a 2 and 3 month length of time. So the goal is to get it at 7% or less. For older people, maybe 8 would be okay, but you know, if you can get it to 6.5, if you can get it to 6, that would even be better. And that's really through that's through lifestyle, that's through medication, that's through monitoring, that's through physical activity. So it can be done.
Do you have to, we have 30 seconds left, and I'm gonna ask you a question, but you're not gonna have time to answer until our next break. But do we have to give up sugar? And is ice cream and apple pie a la mode out of your life completely? Don't answer. We're going to go to break, and you'll answer that when we come back. Everybody, just stay tuned. And thank you for tuning in to Boom Goddess Radio.
Oh yeah. Hello world. Peace and love. I wish you the best. And now for the next. Coming to your mind. Live and direct from the ethers. Now it's all in your speakers. Down to your sneakers. Now as we prepare for our liftoff, you'll need only two things to direct your course. Your ears and your soul. I bring to you the Robert Glasper Experiment. Experimentation for meditation.
And welcome back to Boom Goddess Radio. This is Jennifer Davis Page, your host, and I'm here with Lily Mees, who is giving us so much good information about diabetes today. And again, I thank you so very much, Lily, for joining Boom Goddess Radio today. Before we went to break, I asked you, was apple pie a la mode out of my life completely now? And let's talk about diet and exercise and how that can help a person that has either type 1 or type 2 diabetes.
Yeah, absolutely. So diet and exercise is that the foundation of it should really be a part of everybody's lifestyle, whether you have diabetes or not, is what I tell people. So, and you really want it to be a nutritional plan. So what I would recommend is, if you really want to get an individualized meal plan, you can certainly talk to your doctor about meeting with a dietitian. Mm-hmm. And going over, like, what is the best thing for you based on your age, based on your goals, based on what your medications you are, what, you know, if you're type 1 or type 2. But the biggest thing is, you know, trying to reduce the amount of, I think the amount of how much we're eating, and really trying to do more balanced meals. So, you know, they have what they call the plate method, where they have a small plate, right, and they divide it in half, and half of it should be non-starchy vegetables, and the other half is in quarters, and it should be protein and a starch. So I think if you're really wanting to start maybe with the plate method and look at, you know, what is your plate compared to the plate method. Mm-hmm. And look at trying to incorporate more of those non-starchy vegetables, trying to look at more balance. So does it mean that you can never have sugar? No, of course not, because there's all carbohydrates turn into sugar. And so there are complex carbohydrates that are better for you, more nutrient dense. And there are simple carbohydrates that are really just not the best. But does it mean that I can never eat sugar? No, it means that you just have to balance it out. So for instance, if I'm gonna go to a place and I have to carb count based on my insulin. So some people do that as well for type twos, based on, you know, their insulin regimen as well and medication management. But I won't eat like maybe a biscuit because I do want a little bit of dessert. And right. Maybe I don't have to have the whole apple pie. I could just cut that in half. So if you learn to try to do, you know, one of the best things to do when you go to a restaurant is just, you know, be knowledgeable about what you're eating. Try to eat more whole foods, Mediterranean based, etc. And then when you get your meal, just ask for a box.
Right.
Can I get a take home box?
Right.
And or if you have a spouse or your family member, just share that meal, and you'll just start training your body to eat, you know, smaller portions, and also what's on your plate, healthier portions. But can you have ice cream at times? Of course. Can I have chocolate? Yes. I'm not giving up that.
Thank God that was your answer. All right. I am there are, you know, everybody likes fruit, and there's lots of natural sugar in fruit.
Yeah.
And I'm going to a clinic that tells me that you should not eat anything. The only fruit they want me to have are berries.
Yeah.
All right? So I've been trying to stay on the berry regimen, but sometimes I want a Honeycrisp apple. Okay.
Yeah.
And does going from berries to an apple, I mean, am I asking you a ridiculous question in terms of berries versus apples? I mean, I know it's ridiculous, but the Honeycrisp apple is so good and sweet, and then I'm feeling guilty because I'm saying to myself, okay, this is so good, you shouldn't be eating this. Let's talk about the various fruits that
okay.
need so, to stay away from.
So the dietitian I work with, she says, Lily, if you're going to have fruit in the morning, you should have berries. You should have raspberries, blueberries, mm-hmm. You know, whatever else berries are out there, because it doesn't cause your blood sugar to spike so high.
Right.
You know, the berries, the fruit that causes the sugars to spike high are like the tropical fruit.
Okay.
It's more of like the pineapple, the mango, the, you know, the watermelon's pretty good. I don't think it does as much, but, you know, so she was saying, you know, if you're gonna have that, try not to have that in the morning, because in the morning you're already, your cortisol levels are high, your blood sugars are usually a little bit more elevated. So we're not trying to encourage that. We're trying to, you know, get it within target. Now, if you're gonna have like your little apple crisp, you know, fruit or your tropical, do it more in the afternoon.
Okay.
You know, where you need the energy and you're gonna be walking around and you're gonna be using up all that glucose. Should you do it at night? I probably wouldn't. Should I do it in the morning? I probably wouldn't. I would probably do it when it's like more when I'm active, you know, okay. And I could use that.
And what about watermelon? Yes or no on the watermelon? That's a tropical fruit, but.
I would say yes.
Yes, yep. We can yep. do watermelon in the afternoon yep. if we're gonna walk it off, right?
Yep.
Now, I had a friend who, her A1C, she was hovering really well. She was doing really well between 6 and 7, all right? Uh-huh. And then she went to the doctor for her 6-month checkup, and her A1C jumped from 6 to 13.
Mm.
Now, if you're maintaining a diet, what you think is a good diet, should your numbers shoot up that much that yeah. quickly, or can something else cause, can stress, can yeah. anything else cause those numbers to jump besides yeah. eating apple pie and ice cream every day?
Yeah, so I think jumping up right away, that is unusual. Mm-hmm. You know, I see people going from 6 to maybe 8 to maybe right. 9, but not 6 to like 13,
right.
You know, and what'd you say, in 6 months, in 3 months?
6 months.
Six mm-hmm. months. So, mm-hmm. So that is kind of unusual. It could be a lot of things, you know. I would just have to go back and say, you got to go to your provider right away and
right.
let them know, because as A1C of 13 means that your blood sugars, you know, are in the range of, you know, they're over, definitely over 300.
Right,
and
right,
you don't
right,
want to
right.
be walking around, you know, a person doesn't want to be walking around with, with an A1C that's that elevated for any length of time. So, and just like we talked about low blood sugars, high blood sugars are not good either. People can go into what they call diabetic coma, and it just causes all kinds of metabolic chaos and problems that you don't want to have. So what I would say right away is call your doctor, get help, or go to the ED and get emergency room and go get checked out right away, because that is something that needs to be addressed ASAP. And stress, can stress cause it? Yeah, but you know, there might be a lot more underneath that's going on that you need to be evaluated for.
Can doctors evaluate that? Can they tell you what has caused a jump?
You know, they might be able to do certain tests to see if maybe you have, you know, maybe you became a type one, you got late in adult onset and you need insulin now. But anybody that's usually over 10% with the A1C, they usually put them on long acting insulin right away, because you need to get that blood sugar down. And then, you know, does that mean they have to be on it forever? Not necessarily, but you got to get it under control.
All right. Now, every 15 minutes, there's a drug on television advertising how to get rid of your A1Cs down. Now, Trulicity, that's something that you inject every week. Now, is that, do you know anything? Would you like to talk about various medicines? And
you know,
understand that our audience knows they've got to check with their physicians, of course.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Well, the great thing about it, it used to be like, you know, put people on insulin right away and get, you know, just, they didn't really have that many drugs to treat people. So they have so many great drugs, especially for type two. And one of the drugs that I really like, as long as you have pretty good kidney function, is metformin. Metformin works really good. It helps to cause you to be more insulin sensitive. It helps your liver not to produce as much glucose. It doesn't cause hypoglycemia. So there's, you know, they don't really jump to like insulin right away. Insulin is like on the bottom of the barrel, like on the low end, because they don't want to put people on insulin, because it does cause, it can cause some weight gain. It definitely can cause hypoglycemia. So what they're looking at is putting people on these drugs, like you mentioned, the Trulicity. Trulicity is a GLP-1. And it's an injection you use once a week, and you have to kind of titrate it up in terms of the dosage. So let's say my doctor says, I want you to start on, you know, is another one is Ozempic, start on 25 milligrams of that. And you give yourself once a week injections every week for a month. And what it does is it causes the gut hormones to increase, the gut enzymes, which causes you to feel more full. So it causes your when you eat, the motility to kind of slow down. Mm-hmm. And so that's why you feel full faster. Mm-hmm. It also tells your brain the satiety, like, that's enough, you're done. You know, so you're eating smaller meals, and you're kind of getting a little bit of bloating, and sometimes nausea comes with it, because you're not so used to all that going on. It also produces more insulin out of the pancreas, so that helps with that as well. And it usually doesn't cause low blood sugar.
I know a young man who has just had his toes amputated.
Mm.
Okay, as a result of diabetes.
Yeah.
And you know, we only have a few minutes left in this show. Right. So I'm gonna absolutely have to have you back at some point. Sure. But can you talk a little bit about why does diabetes sometimes lead to a foot or a leg amputation?
Yeah, good question. So I always tell people diabetes is a vascular disease. So it affects you from head to toe. You got blood all over your body. So that's why everything is affected by diabetes. So one of the things is when your A1C is elevated above 7, 8, 9, the higher the number, the worse the numbers, the everyday numbers are not in control, I should say. So it causes vascular problems. And so one of the things is the peripheral vascular disease. Peripheral artery disease. It doesn't allow the oxygen and the exchange that should be happening in your lower extremities, and in other areas not to be flowing the way it should. I'll just try to keep it simple. And you know, if the complications of diabetes can so much be prevented if we are aggressive on the front end. There are various studies that show that there's a UK PDS study I just wanted to read, that keeping your A1C and blood pressure on target, that would be like 140 over 90 or less, A1C around 7, for those with type 2 reduces the risk of death and complications by up to 35%.
We don't have, we are out of time. Lily, we're going to have you back. I want to thank you for allowing our Boom Goddess listeners to get this valuable information from you. And can you just quickly tell them where they can go to get information?
So you can contact us at steppingforwardteam@gmail.com or phone number 520-307-0574. It's Stepping Forward. We do diabetes health coaching. We do support groups. We do education groups. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so very much. I want to thank all of my Boom Goddess listeners for joining us today. Please continue to support Boom Goddess Radio. Go to our website, boomgoddessradio.com. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, Boom Goddess Radio. And we'll see you on the radio again next week. This is Jennifer signing off.